Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're going to be doing a series over the next several weeks. I've invited a few guys on that know a thing or two about elk hunting. And I'm going to be throwing them very similar scenarios that you may encounter or that most guys who've done any kind of elk hunting have encountered on their hunts and see how they would handle it. And even though a lot of the questions will be the same, a lot of scenarios will be the same, it's very interesting to listen to the different approaches from these guys that seem to get it done year in and year out. And so I think it's a really neat perspective and a cool way to learn that way when you're presented with those scenarios or those situations out in the field, you'll be able to apply it. I also want to urge you guys to take the time and please go on iTunes or the Podbean app, give us a review. It's super important for us, helps the ratings, helps keep us ahead of everything, it helps us keep this podcast free, to be honest with you. So if you get out there and do that for me, I'd appreciate it. And please go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. They're our number one sponsor, and they put out an awesome product, and we appreciate them. And I'd appreciate it if you could go check them out. So let's roll into this next episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we are talking elk, and we are continuing with our What Would You Do series, and I got Michael Batiste from the Elk Calling Academy on today, and we're going to pick his brain. We're going to run the scenarios by him and see how he would handle it. Since, like I said, podcast, I warned Mike. I told him, we're doing this in the afternoon. My children and my wife are home now. Undoubtedly, I'm going to get interrupted. My dog is the doorbell just rang and the dogs are barking like crazy. So I apologize to everybody. This is what coronavirus has been doing to us. let me help speed the process up for 1 second. All right. So just give us a quick rundown about yourself for those who hadn't caught you the last couple times you're on.
Yeah. So my name is Michael Batiste. I live in Boise, Idaho. I am the owner, bottle washer, I mean, pretty much all hats of Elk Calling Academy. You know, I kind of grew up in an outdoor family. You know, spent a lot of time with my grandfather fishing growing up and kind of picking his brain. And so that kind of instilled the love of the outdoors. And then, you know, I started chasing elk with a bow in kind of the late 80s, 1988, I think it was. And then just absolutely kind of just fell in love with it over the years, especially when I moved to Idaho and got hooked up with a group of guys that, you know, started doing a little bit of backcountry hunting for elk. And it just mesmerized me. And I just had this thirst to learn everything that I could about them. And that's basically what Elk Calling Academy was developed for, to help people shorten that learning curve. Because I know what it was like when I first started trying to figure it out and learn how to call and everything. And you know, how many times you just bang your head against a wall. And so that's kind of the way Elk Calling Academy started. Was I had worked in the call in, or in the hunting industry for call companies for quite a few years, and I had helped people. But I you know, worked for call companies and helped people learn how to call. And I had a local archery shop tell me that somebody wanted some lessons and they were willing to pay. And I was like, I've taught people. And I got on the phone with the guy, and after talking to him, it just kind of, you know, light bulb went off. And I was like, God, you know, we can pay for lessons for so many different things. I'm sure there's people out there that would, you know, like to pay for, or be willing to pay for, elk calling lessons to help shorten that learning curve and find them success faster. And that's kind of how we got started 2 years ago, I think. So
nice. Nice. Well, that's why we got you on, because you know what you're talking about. So basically what we're doing. So if you're new to what we're doing here with this series, I have a number of different scenarios that are pretty common that you'll be faced with in elk hunting. Especially if you hunt them long enough, you're definitely going to come across these. And we're just listening. We want to know like the different ways to handle those situations, or like, you know, I like to pick the brains of people who know better than me. So that, and basically this is what we're going to do today. But anyway, the first scenario I have is one that I, especially here in Arizona, I hear it all the time. It's early season. It's hot. The moon is full. And you're not really hearing bugles during the day, but you are hearing bugles at nighttime. So you know there's elk in the area. It's not a situation that there's no elk in the area. What are you doing to overcome this? And, you know, how are you attacking this?
Sure. Well, I mean, you have three things right there that kind of pose their own challenges. I mean, you know, early season, bulls really aren't that vocal or fired up yet. Yeah, at night they're kind of, you know, popping off a little bit, but it's not, you know, peak rut type bugling. Then you have the heat and then a full moon. Now, the full moon is one of those things and that I think a lot of people look at the full moon and go, man, it's just, we have that very sliver of chance very, very early in the morning, and then that sliver right at last light. The thing that they don't understand is with full moon activity is, you know, when an elk grazes and gets their stomach full, you know, they're going to sit down and they're going to work on the contents of that stomach. And that's going to take 3.5-4 hours. Well, as soon as that stomach's empty, that elk's going to get back up and feed again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, full moon, if they're heading to bed early, got that middle of the daytime, they're going to be up on their feet and moving. And so, okay, they're up during the middle of the day. It's early in the season, so they're not really vocal. And then you also have the heat. So, I mean, you've got three factors that are playing against you. Generally, what we do early in the season is we don't necessarily work elk. We work areas. And what I mean by that is, because the elk necessarily aren't vocal, doesn't mean that they won't respond. And I get a lot of funny looks when I say that, because everybody thinks that the only way an elk responds is by bugling. It's not. I mean, they can respond by raking. They can respond by low audible type huffs and grunts. They can respond by simply coming to you. Those are still responses. And so what we do is early in the season, we'll work these areas. Now, that early season, since it is hot, you know, if you understand an elk's biology and their temperature ranges of how they need to stay within a certain temperature range, mm-hmm. you understand immediately, okay, if it's hot, I'm immediately going to go find cool, damp, dark draws, because that's where these elk are going to be hanging out early in the season. Now, you can, because these are smaller confined spaces, I mean, you can blow right through there trying to locate, and, you know, there's a chance that you may just blow the elk out of there. The approach we take is we get into those cool, dark draws and we start working that area. Meaning if we get into that cool, dark draw and we've got fresh sign, you know, we've got the green droppings, we can see fresh pea spots on the trail, we can smell the elk, you know, we know they're there. Mm-hmm. Or from, you know, we had trail cameras out during the summer and we know that they're coming into this area in the mornings. Because that summertime activity, a lot is going to be kind of that same activity at that first early season also before they really go start rounding up cows and getting after it. So we're going to go into those cool draws, and we basically kind of start telling stories, you know, because that's what you're doing when you're calling. You're telling a story. You're painting a picture. You're trying to get this image of what you're portraying, and you're trying to get this image into that bull's mind. And so early in the year, we kind of, you know, set up and start doing a scenario, and it's, you know, we go right into the breeding sequence. We hit it early in the year. Now, obviously, we're not going to have the excitement, and we're not going to have the buildup that we will later on in the year, but we can do a milder version of it. But we include a lot of calls that really entice or attract those elk to come check us out. You know, we play on that curiosity of them. I remember last year, we had worked up on this bench, and we scouted this bench all summer long. We had trail cameras. We knew there were several bulls hanging out in this area. And we had done this big loop. We went up high and we were locating, and, you know, we bumped into a couple elk that were, you know, traveling through their travel corridors to their bedding area and just, you know, wasn't calling anything in. And we kind of looped around, and we were working our way back over towards this wallow that we knew. And we came across this little opening, this little meadow in the trees. And I mean, there was probably 12 to 15 rubs around this little meadow. And it's like, okay, there's at least one bull in here. So let's kind of set up and just kind of start doing kind of, you know, our scenario, our blind calling routine. And again, it's just, I'm not worried about interaction from other elk. I'm basically focusing on the story that I'm telling, that is a cow that is starting to come into estrus, and there's a young bull that's kind of tending to her a little bit. And now, he's young and he's not really sure what he's doing. And so I set the Bryce and Brandon, two of my hunting partners, up, and I just kind of started into this routine. And normally early in the season, you don't want to just jump right in and go full tilt. So I'll do a few sounds and I'll wait, you know, 3, 4, 5 minutes, do a few more sounds and wait 3, 4, 5 minutes. But I'm telling the story and I'm moving around. And I remember by the time I got to the third set of sounds and I introduced a bull into the mix, and all I did was just some little huffs and grunts and some light raking. And this bull immediately cracked off a bugle within 60 yards, just on the other side of the meadow. And so I just kept at it and kept going, and all of a sudden he's pacing back and forth on the other edge of the meadow, and he's just doing this roundup bugle. He's trying to call my cows to him, and you know, and I'm trying to, you know, swing closer over to Bryce so maybe I can pull him around the end of the meadow and get Bryce a shot. And I'm focusing solely on that, and all of a sudden I hear Brandon cow call. And I'm thinking, why the heck is he cow calling? And then Bryce looks at me and goes, he shot. And I was like, what? I didn't even hear Brandon's bow go off. And so, you know, we just kind of slipped over to where Brandon was. And Brandon's like, yeah, there was five bulls.
Oh, shit.
What? He goes, yeah. He goes, there was five bulls. He goes, there was a couple of spikes. He goes, the one that was bugling at you guys looked like a decent 5x5. And, you know, the other two I didn't really get a good look at, but the one that was bugling seemed like he was the biggest bull. And I said, okay. I said, well, where did you shoot? He goes, it's funny. He goes, as soon as you swung over to Brandon, one of those two spikes just came on a beeline from the other tree line, straight dead across the meadow, trotting to try to get back behind you and see what was going on. And he made the mistake of walking 8 yards by me.
Nice.
So, but that's one of those things that, you know, because we stopped and worked that area, we knew we had found fresh tracks going in there. We had found fresh sign. We we knew they were there. So because we took the time to set up and work that area, that created that opportunity, that created a little bit of excitement that got the one bull going, that then got the other bulls kind of intrigued. And I mean, it basically, from the trail camera, I know exactly which group it was. It was a small group of spikes and raghorns and one good five that, you know, they had been a bachelor group all summer long that had been hanging out right by that wallow. In fact, you could set your watch at 6:18 in the evening. They would be on that wallow every single night. So, and that's actually, what's that?
Tree stand.
And that's actually, that's why we were heading over that direction. Cause we were like, okay, we'll work a few of these pocket meadows. And if we don't get anything, then, we'll just kind of set up with wind in our favor and wait for those guys to come in the evening. Cause those guys, they're like, we don't care. We just want an elk. And
it was
awesome. Cause Brandon stuck that bull and I mean, he didn't even make it out of the meadow before he tipped over. And it's
nice.
Those two crack me up because, Bryce has hunted with me with enough years and he and I have done the gutless method so many times. And I walk up there and I said, man, rite of passage, Bryce, I'm going to kind of sit back and eat a sandwich and watch you teach your son how to do this. And now, mind you, Brandon, Brandon's 21 years old and he has shot a couple of elk. But so Bryce kind of sits there and he's kind of fumbling with stuff and he looks at me and goes, I don't remember how to do this. And I'm like, you lying sack. And of course, I'm going to jump up, grab my knife and do half of it and then say, there you go. The other half is your guys's. But definitely, yeah, that was one of those things. It was early season. It was hot. We didn't have the full moon aspect of it, but we had the other two. Now, with the full moon aspect thrown in, I'm going to do the same thing to where I'm going to work those areas in their travel corridors, and then I'm going to stage myself near their bedding areas so that I'm close enough that I'm within earshot. But I'm far enough away that I can still control my thermals. And then basically I'm going to do kind of that midday time. I'm going to kind of do an inviting cow, just give some vocalizations that are basically welcoming or asking, that bull that's nearby or any elk that's nearby to come over,
right?
Come check me out, play on that curiosity. And we've done this during the midday a ton where we'll just kind of do 3, 4, 5 soft cow sounds there. We're inviting, wait, 5 minutes and then do some cow sounds again. And then we'll add a little bit of emotion. Maybe we're doing lost, excited cows. We're asking for regathering mews, assembly mews, that kind of stuff. That's definitely asking those other elk to come to us. And a lot of times during that midday, what can happen is that bull that's bedded nearby, he can hear you. You're close enough that he's hearing you. But as soon as he stands up on his feet, either one of two things is going to happen. Either he's going to come over to check you out silently. And that's why you need to have an arrow knock during that midday. You need to be ready. You need to really be listening for, the tick of a branch off an antler or the scuff of a hoof off of a rock, things or a twig snap. You really need to be paying attention to that. So he's either going to get up and come check you out, or he's just going to get up and just give this, little bugle of saying, I heard you. Well, if he's going to get up and he's going to say, I heard you, we're like, aha, we heard you too. We know where you're at. Then we're going to slip in a little closer, and then we're going to start, again, working that bull in that early season routine to where we're focusing on the story that we're telling. We're not interacting with him so much. We're just telling our story to create that interest, that curiosity, that, hey, I need to go over there and check out what's going on.
So you mentioned the midday. That's actually one of my scenarios that I'm going to throw at you. So we're going to go into that one. Basically, it's midday. The rut's on, weather's good, but you've been out there all morning. You haven't heard crap, not even hearing bugles. You know there's elk in the area because you've seen sign, but What are you doing midday to try to create some opportunity for yourself?
So again, that's that thing that, you know, midday that we focus on that inviting cow routine midday. That's just something that, and, you know, I've had a couple of students in the Elk Calling Academy that I've told them that, look, if you just want to go out and shoot an elk every year, you don't care if it's a cow, a spike or a raghorn or whatever. This cow routine is something that you can get into an area and, you know, obviously you need to find fresh sign or you need to know for sure where their bedding area is. And you start working this cow routine by those bedding areas, you will have elk come in and check you out. And a lot of times it's these curious cows and younger spikes and younger bulls that are just kind of curious of, there's a new kid on the playground. I haven't heard that voice before. I have to go over there and check them out. Now the nice thing is since the rut is going on and, you know, we get that bull that cracks off, that's when we slip in and set up and then we really start diving into that breeding sequence to where, you know, we are a bull that has a hot cow and she is definitely an estrus. He's doing, because there's certain sounds that a bull will do during the rut when a cow is in estrus that, you know, you're glunking, your huffs and your grunts, your huffs, grunts and whines, you know, he's pants. I mean, just all these things, if that cow's not in estrus, he's not doing a lot of these sounds because a lot of these sounds are associated with him checking the pheromones floating in the air. You know, for actually checking, is she in estrus? Is she ready to breed? And so, yeah, during that time, you know, midday that we know there's a bull there, and especially if he cracked off just kind of a advertising bugle or bedding bugle to us, we will slip in and start painting that picture. And a lot of times what happens, sorry, I had to sip a little water. What happens is bulls recognize those sounds. They know what's going on in that scenario. They know exactly. So he's going to do a quick run around his cows to check his cows. And all of a sudden, you know, he goes and checks his 8, 10, 12 cows. And he's like, none of them are in estrus.
I want one homeboy's got.
But that dude right over there has one. And that's why a lot of times when you can go into a draw one day and I have no doubt you've experienced this and you've heard people talk about it. You go into a draw one day and there's just multiple bulls screaming everywhere. Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, the rut is on. This is awesome. And you have this great day of bugling at bulls and you're back in camp and you didn't get a bull down, but you're talking about how amazing that day is. And it's like, okay, we are so going back in there tomorrow. The rut is on. There's so many bulls and you go in there the next day and it's just crickets. You can't even buy a bugle.
Yeah.
Well, the reason was because the day before there was a cow that was an estrus that was releasing those pheromones and that bull, that herd bull is letting go with those sounds that he is tending to a hot cow that the other bulls all of a sudden hear. And again, they're going to check their cows real quick. Nope, nothing of mine's an estrus. Then boom, they're going to go over and be around that other hot cow. They're going to be around that hot cow because they want the opportunity to try to breed her also. Mm-hmm. So, and that's why, and you know, when I'm painting the picture of my breeding sequence, I am a bull that is focused and locked in on that cow. Now, during this midday time, if another bull cracks off a bugle 500 yards away from his bed, I don't care about him. He's 500 yards away. So I'm still going to focus in and I'm still going to paint this picture of me being a bull tending this cow because it's all about us right now. We're the only two that exist on the mountainside. Mm-hmm. Now, it's not until that bull gets up and starts coming in and breaks that 150 yard, 200 yard barrier At that point, then I switch. Then I become a defensive bull, which means now I am going to defend my girlfriend to this stranger that's trying to come in and take her away from me.
Gotcha.
So that midday time, it's important to stay in your story. Because if you ever, you can go over YouTube and there's all kinds of videos of, you know, bulls. And even if you've just sat out there and listened to them, and the difference between a bull that has a cow by himself versus a bull that has a hot cow that has other bulls within 150 yards. His demeanor is completely different.
Let's do elk hunting for dummies. How do you tell? What's the difference?
So when a bull has that hot cow and there's no other bulls around, it's just him. He is doing those low audible sounds. He is doing those glunks, those huffs. He's licking the, you know, he's checking the air. He's doing some light raking and this and that. His focus and attention is on her. Now, when you have it, you know, other bulls within 150 yards, well, those other bulls, or even less, those other bulls are sitting there and they're display bugling, you know, lip balling. They're trying to attract that cow. They're doing, you know, roundup bugles. They're really trying to call that cow to them. Well, her herd bull now all of a sudden is getting really nasty lip balls and challenge bugles. You know, he's really screaming at these other bulls. And so you have this mix of where he's doing those, you know, tending grunts. He's doing those sounds where he's tending to the cow, but he's also diverting attention to those other bulls of telling them, dude, back off, stay away. You're not welcome here. And you will know, because the aggression level in his bugles will just basically knock your hat off. There's a ton of intensity. There's a ton of emotion and warning in those bugles.
Okay. I think that it's easy enough to gauge when you've been out there a few times. I'm trying to think for somebody who's really like super novice. Like, I remember, you know, when I first started, every bugle sounds the same to you. You know, they don't sound the same, but you know, it's hard to discern between this and that. And
let me give you an example. Okay. So this is just kind of some bull sounds of a bull that's kind of tending a cow. And I'm going to do the same process. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do huffs, grunts, and whines. Okay. But I'm going to do huffs, grunts, and whines to when I'm just kind of tending. And so huffs, grunts, and whines when I'm kind of tending. You know, there's not a lot of emotion. There's just a little bit of whine. It's like, oh. Now, when there's another bull around, he can do those same huffs, grunts, and whines, but he's going to add attitude. He's going to add emotion to it. So gotcha. See, those are both huffs, grunts, and whines, but the first example is when he's just alone with her and tending her. The second one, he's still doing huffs, grunts, and whines, but now he's a little agitated because there's another bull around. And so he has a little bit more emotion to where he's kind of, you know, given that energy and kind of ramping things up and just kind of slightly, you know, telling that other bull. Now, he can go from that and then ramp it up into challenge bugles, full-blown lip ball display bugles with, you know, heavy finishes and really, really heavy chuckles. That's really establishing his dominance over those other bulls.
So this is another one that I get. I've been faced with many times, and in the last couple of years hunting in Oregon, I've been faced with it a lot. You know, it's rainy, it's windy, calls aren't really carrying very far because, you know, they can't hear it through the rain and whatnot.
Right.
You haven't heard bugles. Hell, you haven't heard, probably haven't heard bugles. And for me, if I'm giving my exact scenario from Oregon last year, I didn't hear a bugle for 3 freaking days. But I knew there was elk there. I was finding new sign. I was finding new rubs. It was just very weather dependent. But, you know, if I'm there on a 7-day hunt and 4 out of my 7 days is raining, I'm going to be hunting, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So, what are you doing in that situation?
So, and I mean, that's kind of tricky there. When I've hunted out of state, yeah, we hunt rain, snow, wind, sunshine, you know, no matter what, you know, when we're, you know, hunting here in Idaho, it really depends on how hard it's raining, whether we go out or not, just because of, you know, the chance of if it's raining really hard, how your blood trail and tracks can just get wiped out, you know, so fast. But wind is one of those things that, you know, because if you think about it, when it's windy, what is going on out there? You have the sound of the wind that's going through the trees that makes it hard to hear. You have the grasses and branches that are constantly moving, so it's hard to focus on movement. Because of the wind, you know, which could be changing directions, it's really hard to, you know, catch the scent. And so with all these things, it kind of diminishes, you know, the elk's survival tools. You know, their ability to hear, their ability to see, their ability to smell. And so, you know, a lot of times those elk are going to tuck into little places to where they can get out of the wind or out of the rain a little bit. But rain, I mean, I've seen them out in the middle of an open hillside still just, you know, feeding in a torrential downpour. Rain doesn't seem to bother them as much as wind does. But wind, I've definitely seen them tuck into, you know, these hidden pockets to where they can, you know, get out of that wind and let their senses do. And that's one of the things that, you know, we've done in, especially in the area that we hunt, is we've really done that homework of, okay, where are these guys going to go? If it's really windy, you know, where are they going to go? Where are they going to hang out? And then how are we going to get in there and this and that? And those are generally, you know, the places that we kind of leave for those windy days. Because one, it's, we don't want to go in there and blow them out, because then with our luck, we're going to end up with, you know, 4 days of just hurricane type winds for the rest of the season. And we already blew out our little windy honey hole.
Right.
But it's, you know, finding those pockets. Now, if you are, you know, out of state and you only have that small little window, you know, that's where, like you said, you found fresh sign, start following those tracks the best that you can, you know, let them guide you and lead you to, you know, where they're going. And that's actually how we have found a lot of our nice little honey hole little pockets, is just by following tracks on the trail and just kind of wandering and seeing, okay, you know, where are these elk going and what are they doing? You know, we did that in Montana a few years back when we were hunting. It just, same scenario. It was a really, really windy day, and God, your calls just weren't going anywhere, and we couldn't hear anything back. I mean, we probably couldn't even hear anything back if it was within 50 yards. It was so windy. Jesus. And so we ended up just, you know, kind of zigzagging on this little finger ridge, just trying to, basically we were just trying to cut tracks. And also we were kind of bugling off each side of this little finger ridge, you know, down in these little pockets. And then all of a sudden we stumbled across this trail that had tracks, and it's like, okay, let's follow. And as soon as we kind of got down in a little bit, man, the wind really stopped. Then all of a sudden it was like, God, was that a bugle? It was like, no, I think that's just our mind. We're, you know, like you said, haven't heard a bugle for a long time, and we're just, right, our mind's creating one. And so we kept going on the trail, and then, yeah, lo and behold, all of a sudden, yeah, there was a bugle and there was another one. And then we started getting closer and we're following this trail, and all of a sudden it hooks back around, and here's this hidden cattle tank that had a leak out two sides that just had these huge wallows that just were tore up. And it's like, I would have never guessed this was back here. And I mean, the wind was nice and calm. The timber was thick. It just knocked all of that down. And man, all of a sudden we started looking around and I mean, rubs galore. And it's like, okay, they spent a lot of time in here. And so on those rainy, windy type days, use the elk sign to lead you into these pockets or lead you into places, you know, that they're going. And sometimes if you can't find a good trail or you're not really, that's when you just kind of got to lace up the boots and cover a little bit of ground. I mean, eventually you are going to, if there's elk in the area, eventually you are going to come across sign. And right. you're gonna know it's fresh sign because, you know, like I said, the droppings, when they're fresh, they're green, and then they find, you know, they start turning a little bit of brown, and, you know, crush them with, if they're just a little bit of brown, crush them with your foot. If they're still really green on the inside, you know, that's really not that old. And then just, you know, start following those tracks the best that you can. And once you've kind of followed those tracks for a little bit, you end up getting kind of a good sense of direction. And then, you know, then you can look ahead. And if you understand, you know, elk and their basic needs of, you know, food, water, cover, and, you know, how they bed down on the cooler side of the mountain versus the hot side of the mountain. And all of a sudden you're seeing this direction of travel. You can look up ahead and go, okay, man, if I was wanting to find a cool, dark timber patch to bed down, it would be that one right up in there. Or, you know, hey, man, this kind of rolls up that little soft little ridge right there and then drops on the backside into, you know, a basin where they could probably get down in the bottom of that basin and get out of this wind or up against, you know, a rock cliff or something. But you'll start to look at those, you know, topography features and just go, okay, if I was an elk in this situation, I would head there, or maybe I would head there, and then just start heading that direction. And if that sign starts getting fresher and fresher, mm-hmm. and just set up and go back to kind of, you know, we're going to locate first, you know, we're going to do some locate bugles to see if we can get a response in a location. If we get a location, great. Then we're going to move in and we're going to start working that bull. But then if we don't get a you know, response back, or we don't get a bugle back, you know, then we're going to set up and kind of start doing that blind calling scenario again. Sit there and we'll sit in that area for about an hour doing that blind calling scenario. And if nothing comes in, we'll get up and start following that sign again and hope it's getting fresher, 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 and just set up same thing. Locate bugle. Oh, we got a response. Good. No response bugle. Set up and call.
Gotcha. So one thing I realized back in the day, I think it was elite season archery elk hunt here in Arizona, 2011. And, you know, obviously we're not chasing bugles at that time. The hunt's in November, mid-November. But we had inclement weather the whole time. Snow and just cold and super, super windy. I'm talking like if it wasn't blowing 20, it was blowing 30, you know. Right. Just the whole time. And I moved into an area, I moved lower elevation, I moved into an area that I can glass. But I found, and I was like, we're not going to find elk. It's just so windy. They're going to be bedded down. They're going to be bedded down. But, you know, they have to eat. They have to get, they're a big animal. They need food. They need to do things. And it might keep them down for if it was just a day worth of wind. But if you got 4 or 5 days worth of wind, they're not laying down for 5 days. So right. I just started, you know, glass. I mean, it was terrible for me, literally just getting blasted in the face. But I would just kept glassing into the wind, and glassing into the wind, man. And then all of a sudden, I just started picking up elk after elk after elk after elk after elk. And they were just all up, and they were in these little, like you said, like these little hidey hole, these little pockets that were as out of the wind as they possibly could be, but they were up and they were feeding. You know, and I ended up killing a bull on that hunt. It was day 11, but I ended up killing a bull on that hunt. And, you know, I just end up spotting stalk, but it gives you the insight. It gives you, having those experiences, you start thinking about things. I mean, regardless if it's late season, early season, whatever, a really, really, really windy day there. And if it's wind that's going to carry through for more than a couple of days, they're probably going to move into an area that they can, you know, like you said, get out of the wind.
Right.
And find shelter. I think, you know, in the late season, it might be more for comfort than I'm sure it is for both seasons, but I feel like in the early season, they're doing it more just because they want to be able to, you know, use their senses, you know, if it's really, really windy and they're under the trees or they're, you know, in a spot that they can't rely on the wind, that's, you're taking away one of their major senses, or their major sense, which is their sense of smell. So, but, cool. So you talked about this, slow, like breeding sequence, and I'm going to do something a little different. I don't care how long it takes you on this podcast. If it's a 5-minute deal, if it's a 10-minute deal, do you think you can create that? You got the tools with you right there to create that and run us through it?
Yeah, I'll do part of it. Okay. It's one of those things that, you know, with the herd members over on the Patreon page that
gotcha.
Yeah, really, the e-course and all that, that those guys, you know, they get the full on version of it. But yeah, so basically, I mean, you know, since I kind of did Huffs, Grunts and Whines, and so generally it's the breeding sequence, it's kind of like you're building a fire, you know, when you're in camp. Mm-hmm. You kind of start, you know, a little bit small, and you start kind of adding, you know, some things to it. And so a lot of times, you know, when first start, it just starts with, you know, a few easy cow sounds. And then that's when I'll kind of take a break. Now, if I'm back behind calling, this is one of those things that I've kind of designated an area, you know, 20 by 20 yards that I'm just going to kind of move around, you know, give that sense of movement, that direction. And a lot of times while I'm moving around, I am, you know, maybe just a couple soft cow sounds while I'm moving, you know, showing that there is a group there. They're kind of communicating with each other. And I'm going to do those cow sounds, you know, a couple of times before I start introducing a bull. And, you know, when I introduce that bull, it's not jumping right into, you know, full blown screams and bugles. It could be pick up a branch and just do some light raking on that tree. You know, he's kind of starting to feel a little bit, you know, he's starting to pay attention to this cow. She's grabbed his attention a little bit. So kind of do some, you know, raking and sorry about that.
Are the coughs included?
yeah, the coughs are included. So, but no, those just, you know, those little huffs. You know, and those are some of those low audible sounds that I talk quite a bit about over, you know, on the Academy page. Because I think so many people kind of tune their ears only to that high pitched bugle.
Right.
That they don't pay attention to these low audible sounds. In fact, I had One person last year, he was heading to Colorado, and we talked about these low audible sounds before he was heading to Colorado. And man, when he got back, he immediately called me. He was like, I had no freaking clue that there was that much of those low audible sounds going on in the forest. Because until you really tune your ears or really start listening for that, you don't realize how much of it is really out there. And in a lot of times, especially in a lot of these states where there's wolves or a high predator or heavy pressure, they may not crack off really hard bugles. They may do a lot of these low audible sounds a lot more than really announcing with those big hard bugles. So I'll kind of introduce those huffs, those grunts, and then just kind of go back and forth between the cow sounds and that a little bit. And then as it starts kind of building, as I'm adding a little bit more wood on that fire and building it up, that's when I'm going to start adding in kind of like that first set of huffs, grunts, and whines that I did. You know, nothing real big, aggressive, just, you know, he's kind of following her around a little bit, and he's kind of starting to get frustrated because she's just not being very submissive. She's not, you know, kind of, she's not giving in yet. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's when, you know, you kind of start adding in a few more of the important cow sounds. How about that? We'll leave that. Those are some of the nuggets that I give the herd members over there. But it's, you start adding in some of these more kind of dedicated, you know, sounds that she is kind of, you know, starting to become submissive. She is basically inviting him over a lot more. And then that's to the point now where I will start doing the cow sounds and the bull sounds from the same location as I'm moving around that area. Because before, where I was doing them, I would do the cow, then I'd move to another area, do a cow, move to another area, do the bull. And so you had this separation between the bull and the cow. But as I build that excitement up and add in some of these more important sounds, I'm going to have that bull right there by that cow, because that's what adds that realism. Now he's right there on her. He's licking her back. He's you know, glunking, and that's where I'm, you know, just popping my hand on that tube to give that glunking sound too. Right. And so it's not jumping into it with all of the major sounds right from the get-go. You want to build that up. You want to build that excitement up. And it is one of those things that pacing is oh so important on this. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you rush. And it's funny too, because as I'm moving around this area where I do these, if I find a good raking stick, I will lean it up against a tree. Especially if I have one that has good bark, it's producing the sound of that raking that I want. It's like, okay, and maybe I'll have two or three of those in this little area that I'm moving around, but those are my designated raking trees. But I will lean those sticks up, and my hunting partners always chuckle. Because it could be 3-4 days and we're back in that area and they're pointing and going, Michael's been here. And they're pointing at these sticks leaning against these trees. And I wonder if there's other hunters that walk into these areas and go, what the heck? Why are we finding all these sticks leaning up on trees out here? This is just crazy. But I mean, it's important when you find those good raking sticks. You know, yeah. You don't want to pick the one up off the ground that's half rotten and breaks and falls apart in your first attempt. And especially as you progress through that breeding sequence, you're really going to ramp up the intensity of that raking. Mm-hmm. And you're really going to start getting after it to where, you know, you're really cracking that branch, your raking stick, you're really cracking that against the tree. You know, you're really giving that appearance of, you know, the excitement and the testosterone of that bull really amplifying and really starting to build.
Right. Creating the illusion.
That's exactly it. I mean, that's what calling is. It's telling a story, painting a picture, creating an illusion.
Yep. I actually started carrying You know what? I'm going to show you here on the video real quick. Because I happen to have it right by me. But I started carrying.
Okay.
That.
Yep.
You know, easy to pack. You know, it's just the back fork of, you know, like a 250 bull. Yeah, I just put that in my, you know, strap it to the side of my pack, and I use this, and it, because it's got that, it's got a really good V, it's really good to rake on the, you know, on the tree, and it makes, you know, about as real a sound as you can make, and easy enough to carry, doesn't get caught on stuff and whatnot, but,
You know, and I've gotten that question a lot, and, you know, I know there's, Ralph Ramos.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, carries a shed antler with him all the time.
I got buddies here that carry big ones, like actual big antlers with them. Like, dude, that's a lot.
but it works. I've had a lot of people ask me if you know, if I've ever, you know, carried them, and I'm like, no, it's one more thing to carry. But then I'll see, you know, some of those guys and talking to them, and I think the Elk Bros, I think those boys actually, you know, carry the antlers too. And I understand why, because of the sound quality that you get and the realism that you get. I don't know. I've always been that one where I've been like, you know, I pack enough other crap.
Oh, you know, I was that way too, but then I got two or three situations where I wanted to break a damn tree and I couldn't find a damn stick. And I was like, you know, fuck, this is just, it was killing me. I was like, matter of fact, it happened to me in Utah a couple of years ago. Every stick I picked up like disintegrated in my hand. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I know if I'm raking this tree right now, I just started like, honestly, I started like picking up rocks and rubbing them up and down on the trees. And I was kicking branches off the low hanging branches off, and, you know, anything to create the sound. I was like, what the heck, you know, I had that. And I had a situation here with one of my buddies, and he was real super, super high. It was his first elk hunt. And he was filming me actually, but at one point we were on this bull. I was actually 60 yards from this bull. I just couldn't get a damn. And I looked back at him, and the bull was actually raking a tree. I looked back at him and I go, rake a tree, rake a tree. And he couldn't find one. But I mean, and he picks up like this twig and he starts, and I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, I just forget about it.
You know, that reminds me of a couple of things. I remember back, God, I want to say it was 2000 or 2001, there was a company that came out with something that they called the Rake and Break Bugle.
Oh, really?
And I mean, really what it was basically a Gatorade bottle that they cut the end off of and then glued on a PVC pipe to it. But the theory was you could bugle with it, but then you could take, you know, that bell end, that Gatorade bottle, and rub that on the bark. And I'm always a tube junkie. So if there's something new, I'm intrigued. I'm going to, okay, I'll buy it. I'll test it out. I'll check it out. Right. And I was excited because I was like, oh, I don't have to find sticks anymore. And so I bought this thing, and my hunting partners, I was like, oh, you guys got to check this out. Watch this. And I went away from them a little bit, and I'm bugling, and then all of a sudden I grabbed that and I started raking. And I mean, I come walking back into camp all proud, and I was like, how did that sound? And they're like you were rubbing a Gatorade bottle against a tree. Yeah, it's pretty much what it was. So, but then also I remember we were on a hunt here in Idaho, and we had a good friend of ours join us, and he wasn't an archery hunter for elk. He was a rifle guy, but he just wanted to experience the rut and the bugling. And this was a coveted tag that we drew. And so he's with us, and I'm back there calling, and he goes, Hey, I go, what? He goes, can I rake? And I'm like, yeah, what, whatever. Yeah, if you can find a stick. And I go back to Colin and I hear him rake and I turn around. The only thing he could find was this branch that was about 12, 13 feet long. And he's got this great big old long branch and he's raking on this little sapling. And I immediately forgot what I was doing with calling and, you know, pulled out the camera and just started taking pictures of him with this great big branch. I mean, it wasn't a stick. It looked like a branch that had fallen off a tree and he picked up and just started raking on a nearby tree with it. But
yeah. Yeah.
But I understand the benefit of packing the horns. And in fact, I've got a little, you know, I'm sitting here looking, I've got a little 5x5 set.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be real big. Just a matter of fact, I just cut off the damn back. I mean, it's small.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sitting here looking at these, and this was a bull that I took in Montana that it actually fell off the wall, and it's something that I skull capped and it split the cap. But it's kind of cool because it has a bunch of dried velvet on it, and I shot this bull like October 6th.
Uh-huh.
So it has these dried velvet strands and shards up on the 4 and 5. And it's really kind of unique because he lived in an old burn. And I was first looking at that going, God, those are about the right size and easy to pack. But now I don't want to ruin that just because of the memories of Montana on that dude. And especially, I mean, that's kind of unique with that dried velvet.
No, I just, that's a shed. I found that. I found that actually in late season deer hunting.
Okay.
And so it must have been from the year. It's actually even chewed a little bit from rodents.
I saw that. So. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of a brownie, but it's not even a brownie.
It's a half and half.
Yeah. Somewhere in between. It's a tanny. But, it's a tanny.
There you go.
But, yeah, it works good, man. I like it.
I think it's one of those things that's becoming more and more popular, especially because with, you know, the introduction of the wolves and these bulls really going to those lower audible type sounds. You know, raking is one of those things that carries with it, you know, so many different meanings, and they can convey, you know, frustration. They can convey boredom. They can do a lot of things. And so I think the importance of raking, and there's been times where I've been working bulls and I've thrown every sound at them. I've walked towards them. I've walked away from them. I've bugled over the top. I've ignored them. Ultra aggressive. I mean, just everything and nothing. And until I picked up a stick and started raking. And then all of a sudden that was the final nail in the coffin that really pushed him over the edge. And so it is a tool that I think is underutilized, but is an extremely effective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's just another piece of the puzzle, man. You create the illusion. You gotta add all the, as much realism as you can.
You know, and that's one of the things that I ask the elk calling academy students all the time. And I'm like, okay, when you guys are out there and you're moving and calling, are you moving and calling like an elk, or are you moving and calling like a human?
Yeah.
And they're like, well, what do you mean? I said, trust me, early on in my career, man, it was all about miles. If I didn't get close to, 15, 16, 17 miles in a day, it was a wasted day. It was ridiculous. And, you know, I'm bugling a bunch as I'm moving, and it wasn't until one time I was sitting there going, have I ever seen an elk move 15 miles in a day and bugle every 300, 400, 500 yards as he's moving throughout all those miles?
Nope.
Nope. So why am I doing it? And that's when I really sat there on that ridge and was like, how many stinking elk have I hiked by? Have I gone by? How many elk have I blown out because they saw me way before I saw them? Or any of that. And so that, and as the years kind of ticked on to, the body kind of changes about, doing a 15, 16, 17 mile day in rugged elk country here in Idaho, it kind of, your body kind of dictates and changes how you're going to, attack some of those areas.
For sure. For sure. Oh, well, awesome, man. I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your knowledge with us. We're going to get you back on here. I got some more scenarios I want to run by you.
Outstanding. No, I appreciate it. This has been a blast. I've enjoyed these.
Too. And hopefully my kids and dogs won't be so annoying next time. Right now I hear them fighting upstairs, but they're upstairs.
There you go. Perfect.
Oh, my God. All right, buddy.
Appreciate it, John. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Appreciate it.